His skin is white just like a ghost. Thick Irish roots and his blonde hair. And he sounds like a Chicago super fan. A music nerd with a collection of CDs from here to there. Yes, Andy Dare is in Chicago, interviewing and barbecuing. It's the Andy Dare Show. It's the Andy Dare Show.
Welcome to the Andy Dare Show. I'm your host, Andy, and today we've got episode 146. I am joined by a rock and roll photographer, Bobby Talaman. And the last couple years, I'm obviously checking out a bunch of concert photos and stuff like that, just browsing the web and looking for guests for the show. And it turns out a lot of these guys, all their pictures have a little watermark on the corner, and it says Bobby Talaman Photography. So, of course, me being a curious mind, I decided to check out his work, went to his website, bobbytalaman.com, and was inundated with a whole bunch of cool stuff from ranging from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and today. And the guy works so much. He's got an awesome eye for photography, and he's been doing it a long time. He's got a lot of cool war stories from the photo pit. And I thought it would be an interesting chat. The guy couldn't be nicer. The guy's got some awesome info about behind-the-scenes stuff, his first concerts shooting Led Zeppelin, some cool stories with that, things to avoid if you're a photographer of music, the whole thing of social media and everybody having a cell phone with a camera, that whole debate, we get into that. And Bobby's a cool dude. It was a nice chat. And I totally thought it totally fit the Andy Dare Show to have him as a guest. Obviously, the podcast format does not exactly fit itself perfectly to photography, you know, being an audio thing and all. But I will include some of his work on the page. And, of course, a link right over to bobbytalaman.com. That will pretty much be a way to check out all of his stuff. And, it's a great chat. Look forward to hearing the interview. And besides that, I want to thank everybody who has signed up for the Honeycomb fanzine. Once a month, we are sending out homemade fanzines made straight directly out of my house, the Honeycomb Hideout, here in picturesque Westmont, Illinois. And it's going to have concert reviews. It's going to have doppelgangers, courtesy of my friend Tyler Kale. It's going to have concert reviews, album reviews, poetry, artwork, humor, all sorts of stuff. Do check it out. To subscribe, it costs you zero. You just need to send me your mailing address, or you can call and leave a voicemail at 630-341-3022. Tell us who you are and where you're living, where your mailing address is at, and we'll start putting you on the list. I want to thank the 30-plus subscribers that we've got. And if you like what you're reading, tell a friend. If you have a buddy that's into magazines, into music, into interesting pop culture stuff, send him over. Have him call 630-341-3022 and give us his mailing address and name, and we'll put him on the list, or her. It's been an awesome time with the Honeycomb. I got the idea reading the Sub Pop USA book by Bruce Pavitt, who started the fanzine Sub Pop. That turned into a record label that changed the world with Nirvana, Soundgarden, Screaming Trees, all sorts of stuff. They're still doing it over 25 years later, still making groundbreaking music out of the Pacific Northwest. And it's just a great thing to see some successful stuff that just started from a piece of paper that was made at home on a Xerox with a word processor. And I thought in 2015, with this flimsy digital era of here today, gone tomorrow info, why not give you something tangible that you can put away in your desk drawer and look back on in years and think about all the fun, interesting entertainment that we're trying to bring you here at Dare Network. And AndyDare.com is the plug. Obviously, that's got everything. That's got my Empty Lighthouse reviews, Recently did a Death Cab for Cutie review on there, and should be a lot more to come. EmptyLighthouse.com for my articles and reviews. But really, you can find everything. You can find all my social media platforms. You can find the Empty Lighthouse reviews. You can find, obviously, the Andy Dare Show. You found it already, but you can find more of them. You can find our archive at archive.org, which has got something like 155 episodes. And totally free, streaming at your will, whenever you want to hear. If you go through the list and you see there's a guest that might interest you, check it out. Couldn't hurt. And while you're at it, thanks for supporting all of our awesome sponsors. We've been doing this for over 4 years now. And without you guys supporting our sponsors, we would just be doing this for free. So it means a lot. We put a lot of work into this. We put a lot of work into promoting this. So thanks for supporting the sponsors. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for checking out my other guys on my network, Tyler Kale, Jay Porks. And me and Tyler have a brand new podcast called Spin Class. It's a weekly discussion of a classic hip-hop album. We're two episodes in. Find that at spinclasspodcast.com. All right, so I think that about does it. And I just want to thank you for listening, and onward and upward, here is my episode 146. Picture this with special guest Bobby Talamon. Hey everybody, thank you so much for checking out the Andy Dare Show. Today it is episode 146. I am joined by Bobby Talamon. How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Pretty good, yes. You are one of the biggest photographers in the Chicago scene since the 70s. You have a huge body of work. Check it all out at BobbyTalamon.com. And hundreds of photos. I saw over 3,000 artists have been photographed by you. And you recently just got off the tour with Bob Dylan, a new guy in the game. How was shooting Mr. Dylan?
A pain in the ass. But it's very lucrative because really not many photographers have access to them. So I'm kind of lucky that I do.
Yeah, that's awesome. How come it was a pain in the ass, though?
Well, because, you know, if you've been to a Bob Dylan show as of late, but they're very difficult to shoot because of the notoriety of the lighting. It's very dim lit because he's thwarting himself from photography and whatnot.
Sure.
Even for professional photographers, it's very, very tough as far as live. He doesn't really, I think he's at an age where he doesn't feel he needs it.
Okay.
Although, you know, the other flip side of the coin is it should be documented, so... Technically, since time out of mind, I've been involved with shooting live photography for him as well.
That's pretty awesome.
I feel lucky that I've had the opportunity because Bob Dylan, I appreciate the body of work and how he invents this stuff, but it's a very difficult show to shoot. You need real high-end professional cameras to get any kind of modicum of good facial tone and recognition of the performance.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind
There's
of smart
no way
on
to
his,
put it besides that.
It's smart on his behalf because, I mean, I think he's 66 or is he in his 70s now? And you might as well turn down the lights. You know, you're not exactly like, the hottest, youngest, good-looking artist. Why not turn down the lights? And but I can see on your side that's real pain to try to capture that.
Let alone, even if you wanted to attempt to photograph them, they're going to come up with a no.
Yeah.
So no professional photographers have been allowed to shoot technically a show of Bob since like 1986. It's somewhere around there. So again, there's very, very few photographers that have access to him in regards to shooting this stuff. And it's partly because, like you just said, he's at an age where he doesn't feel like he's comfortable with his image in regards to that, even though he dresses like a renegade still.
Yeah.
And he does. He dresses like he's got a 10-gallon hat and a suit that he's a gambler on the Mississippi riverboats.
Or
by
Zorro.
Mark Twain.
Yeah.
He dresses like that. And so you have that kind of shtick to him. And again, I think there's probably only a few photographers that have access to him since then, and I'm one of them. So
that's really cool.
I think since 82, when did I start reshooting him? Time out of mind. 92, technically. I shot him before that, but 92 on is when I've had access to him, so I've probably done maybe 86 Bob Dylan shows total.
That's incredible.
And is this a thing of where you're always at the Chicago gigs, or do you travel with the groups at all, or is it just you stay?
Yeah, I do both, but I do travel with groups. I was lucky with Roger Waters and The Wall, because the dress rehearsals were in Toronto, and the beginning of that tour began in Chicago for 4 nights at the United Center. And I knew his son, Harry, who does keyboards, and explained how you're coming to my town, and can you tell your dad this is the kind of photography I do? Next thing you know, I got the gig to tour the world with The Wall.
Awesome.
Because it started in Chicago. But yeah, I do tour on it. Mostly in the Midwest guy, though. Like with Bob Dylan, it was 4 nights local. Here, Columbus, Ohio, Detroit, Michigan, and I'm missing a date. Oh, Milwaukee. So,
nice.
But technically, that's my route. It's within like an hour, six-hour drive of Chicago.
A day trip of Chicago. Nice.
Yeah.
And talk about something that is eye-catching and a complete spectacle on stage, The Wall, compared to Dylan, which he's got the lights turned low. The Wall is, you know, an incredible every sensory overload type deal. And that might be kind of an easier shot because everything's already on stage presented for your eye already a little bit, right?
Correct. It's a theater production, correct. Although yeah. Big in scale because The Wall covers the width of whatever arena he was in. Or so the Wrigley Field, the 500 feet of wall. Correct. It's a mammoth production.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's easier to shoot because it's theater related and it's got a story to tell.
Cool. You mentioned this before we started recording, but going back and looking at all the work, are there photos you have no memory of, or is it a lucid thing of you see the photo, you remember where you were at, what you were feeling that whole day?
It's more what you just described. I really, the early 80s was kind of a blur because of my episodes with partying with certain bands, no offense, but as a... From 85 on, I will, if I recognize the photo, I'll know the date and the actual physical show and what it is. The answer to your question, yes, I will have a recollection of it in my mind as far as specific artists. I'll do my best if you're bringing one up now or whatever, but
cool.
Yeah, I do have a memory of that as far as specific time frames of photos that I shot.
How about like the first memory of photography and you and your family? Where did you grow up? When did you know that this was something that you really wanted to do in your heart?
Uh, 1975 is when the first band ever photographed live was Led Zeppelin, courtesy of my sister. Prior to that, probably the early 70s, when the... Circus magazine was just starting, and Cream magazine, not Rolling Stone in particular, real rich imagery in those two publications. And when I would go to the local record store, I would see those images. I knew in my gut, even without really not knowing photography, that was something I wanted to do, that I think I could be good at doing it, believe it or not, even though I was naive and stupid. But I knew then, and I grew up on the shore. I grew up in Lincolnshire, Illinois, which is about an hour's drive north of the city.
Sure.
Nice. And that's where I went through high school before I went to college and came back to Chicago. But I grew up on the shore, but I've been a fan of rock and roll and music imagery since probably fifth or sixth grade.
Okay, awesome. Is it a thing of where, like, the equipment and getting your hands on an actual legit camera and nice equipment when you were in high school and stuff, was that a difficulty? Was it mowing lawns? Was it finding odd jobs to try to get stuff like that?
No, it's pretty, you know, you're asking good questions. I've been interviewed a lot. These questions never come up. I'm impressed.
Thanks.
In regards to the question of cameras and stuff, the first show I ever physically shot was the Physical Graffiti Tour of Led Zeppelin. Now, I came in with a Pentax SLR with a 50mm lens and 3 rolls of film. And I blew through the film within like the first 2.5 minutes of the first song, Rock and Roll. And meanwhile, now I'm out of film, but I realized there's only one other cameraman in the photo pit. It was Neil Preston, a West Coast guy who actually was the tour photographer for Led Zeppelin for many years. So as much as I was in, unlike then, you could be in the photo pit for the entire show, believe it or not. So I saw the entire show without any working film or without a camera. from that pit, but I was more watching Neil, since Neil, probably the biggest photographer of the 70s is this guy. And I was writing down notes as far as the kind of camera gear he was using, how many rolls of film he had. When he opened up his, again, I did not even talk to the guy, although I knew who he was.
Okay.
And I, all right, so he's 36 rolls of film. He's a Nikon camera guy with four different lenses. Started writing all that down and realized this is not cheap. But I did ask my mother at the time, this is what this guy was shooting with. And even though she couldn't afford the Nikon, we got a, something similar. And even though she couldn't afford four lenses, zooms were becoming popular. And the rolls of film were on me, but I would do what Neil was doing, 30 rolls of film, which was averaging like two rolls per song, give okay. or take. So that's how I got my start, was just that. But yeah, even in the 70s, it was not cheap to buy all the gear I was just talking about. Well, but I wanted to follow in Neil's footsteps, so Nikon. That's how I became a Nikon guy, was because of Neil Preston.
That's awesome. And, like, you could have seen that show as a complete bust, you know, running out of film and just giving up on the whole thing. Real smart of you to take notes on the other guy, the more established guy, and seeing what he's doing and trying to mimic it in your own way. That's pretty awesome. You ever have an equipment crisis? Well, this is actually what you just said, but as a band's about to go on, something's not working, you ever drop a camera, anything like a bad story from shooting a band?
Yeah, right. I could just say immediately last year, I love Riot Fest, but opening night was horrendous. One of my favorite bands of all time is headlining the Riot, not the main stage, but one of the second smaller stages, Slayer.
Nice.
But that was sideways rain, 40 degrees, muddy, awful. It was raining probably from 4 o'clock on, off and on, but by the time it came on, it was just a mess. And as I left that venue to go into the press tent, I slipped on mud, and the whole camera bank fell in front of me, and I crushed it with my body weight.
Oh, jeez.
Took out a Nikon D4 as far as I was able to save the memory card, but the camera got destroyed.
Oh.
But yeah, no matter what, I can bring up a half a dozen other instances similar that were just like shooting Tool in Lollapalooza was a total mess to my cameras because of the amount of body surfers that were impacting my...
Oh, geez.
Physically abusive, the show. But
where's the security?
Again, another band that's very notorious with photography, similar to Bob Dylan, these guys, so... I got the okay from management to shoot from the crowd, which was a huge mistake. As much as I'm a huge Tool fan and have seen them in arenas, but never in an outdoor venue like Lala, mm-hmm. I didn't know to expect that mammoth of a circle of a mosh pit. It was the largest mosh pit I think I've ever seen, but ever. Jeez. I don't think anything will ever top it because that's like 60,000 kids all in unison slashing about to Tool. But yeah, I can give you a dozen instances where cameras have just been taken to the World War III and back.
That's incredible. How about like nowadays in 2015, you got all the kids with their cell phones in hands, watching vicariously through their screens. I had an interesting show about 3 weeks ago. I saw Scott Lucas in Local H in Bolingbrook out here. And, you know, Scott doesn't like... cameras. He doesn't like the phones up. I've noticed that from a couple different shows, but I saw this one. He mean mugged the guy in the front row, and I go, okay, I'm going to put my phone away. I didn't really have it out that much, but I'm just going to watch out. And in the middle of the song, he walks over, grabs the dude's cell phone, and whips it behind the drum riser. And everybody just started laughing. Yeah, everybody just started laughing, and he took a couple songs, and then he apologized to the guy and said, it's not that I hate you. I actually love you. I'm sad that you're turning into a robot. You'll get your cell phone back, or if I broke it, I'll buy you a new one. How about everybody put the phones away? And is that something even more in your heart as a photographer, being like, why is everybody – can't people just enjoy it and then see the photos the next day from the newspaper or on the website?
The cat's out of the bag. As much as I appreciate what Scott Lucas was portraying there, and I know Peter Frampton's another one who I've seen had a confrontation similar.
Sure.
And City Winery is a venue in Chicago where, like Lindsey Buckingham, same deal. The guitar player from Fleetwood Mac, was really pissed off about the same thing. Why do people insist on doing that? Well, you know what? Technology is to the point where people can do that. If they want to save some kind of imagery from a show, even though it's crap, that's basically their prerogative. I mean, as much as if you're an artist, the cat's out of the bag. There's no way
you can
quickly put a post-it on the 8x10 little notice saying no photography, including cell phones allowed. Still, if it's a 300-person venue, up to 5,000, up to 15,000, there are going to be 20 or 30 postings on YouTube or online of that show in particular, even though the signs say that. The cat's out of the bag. I don't know. I can't speak for Scott Lucas and his mind, but he feels like he wants to make the show more from the heart as far as how you're going to remember. 16 Crimson, similar deal. They're Robert Fripp is very notorious for no photography, yet everyone photographs. I don't know how else to explain it. The cat out of the bag. There's no way that you'd be able to stop it. There's
yeah,
no way.
If I was a front man, I wouldn't want to even make it that uncomfortable where we have to deal with the situation. I would probably just ignore it and keep moving. It's
right.
2015. As you said, the cat's out of the bag. But how about a thing like Instagram where you can say it's a good or an evil thing for photography? Good in that everybody can now put filters on their pictures, gussy them up a little bit, make them look a little bit more professional. But then on the other hand, you got people posting pictures of their meals, their cats, their dogs every hour on the hour. And I know you're on there as
I have no choice. Social media.
It's B Talaman at Instagram.
Yeah.
And are you a fan of it, or is it another necessary evil?
It's another necessary evil. I am. It depends on the day. Some days I really love seeing the photography that people I follow, specific rock and roll photographers, and some days I could give a crap about it. But it is a necessary evil. Again, you're asking awesome questions. I don't mean, again, like Scott Lucas throwing that cell phone from someone in the front row, the cat's out of the bag. What are you going to do? Either you're going to embrace it and follow, or you're going to be totally unknown. I can't afford to be totally unknown.
Neither can I. That's why I'm on all of those things. Yeah, I guess we'll I'm just about done here. I got like 4 photos that I thought were awesome. Maybe if you can remember them, if we talk a little bit
sure.
about them. All right. On your website, you got it split up as 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s and plus. And in the 90s, you had one of Bono. Just complete ball of charisma. He's got to be another easy one to portray on film.
Is he carrying the champagne bottle with Edge in the photo?
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, that was the Octoon Baby tour where he became how do you pronounce that? The
Mesophilias
devil?
Or something? I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
Mesophilies. He had the devil horns at the end, and that was prior to him putting the devil horns on. It was unique because there was a runway coming out. Did four dates of that tour, if I'm not mistaken. And that band back then was really wanted to try to approach everyone in the audience. I think this long runway coming out, which was unusual back then in the 90s to have that. But yeah, the champagne bottle was to celebrate the fact that, you know, there was that whole album, that whole tour is about grandiosity. The champagne being, let's just spray the crowd and enjoy ourselves and enjoy the moment. I love stuff like that. Spontaneity. Trying to live up to the hype of the craziness of a tour. And I think that tour in particular showed you too, as far as being pop in circumstance and embracing it and not wanting to be like unique and aloof.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was.
And I love black and white too, by the way. I think that photo is black and white.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, it was a complete 180 from that Joshua Tree era of complete earnestness.
Yeah.
And then they were almost Hollywood stars, The Fly, all that stuff, and calling up George Bush. I thought that was a great tour. Yeah, the second one is Bowie and Trent Reznor together on stage, probably during their I'm Afraid of American song. That was pretty awesome.
Thank you, man. I've been a friend of Trent since he was with Wilkin Cox back in the
Sure.
That's how I met him, before his first album, Head Like a Hole. So I've been off and on working with him a lot. And yeah, that tour was unique because I think I'm Afraid of Americans is what provoked it for the year that, what was that, 98, 97?
Yeah, about then.
So, you know, David totally loved how Trent was embracing technology and intense industrial disco dance, kind of like Wax Trax, the whole label-inspired kind of vibe.
Sure.
Sure. And so we thought that'd be cool to have not only doing some songs together, but embracing my music and what I'm currently doing with what Trent's currently doing to the newer crowd. So, yeah, it was a fascinating tour. But every time, I'm a fan of both. I'm a fan of David Bowie and a fan of Nine Inch Nails and Trent separate. But, yeah, I loved the fact that they came out on stage together, Trent on keyboards doing David's songs. And then during David's set, Trent would do, like, sing some backup vocal. And so, yeah, that was back when Trent was crazy, long hair, intense.
Sure, yeah.
Like the song I'm Afraid of Americans, and David more the fashionista. But that's what I love about the shot, David looking cool and Trent looking, like, completely crazed.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous shot. And, yeah, my episode a couple weeks ago, Martin Atkins of who played in
Killing
Joke
Ministry.
Love the guy.
I'm good friends with the guy.
Yeah.
And Public Image Limited. Yeah.
Sure. And he had an early story of Trent as well. So it's it's all coming full
circle. Martin is one of the best dudes. Philosophical, everything about that guy I totally love. His drumming, his intensity, the fact that he really now is like a promoter of get you to go out and get your band on the road.
Sure,
and
Professor.
The book is called Super Smart, I think is what he...
Yep.
That's a book out that explains the whole situation, the crazy, nutty world of rock and roll and touring. That guy's awesome. Martin, I just love that guy.
If there's one guy who could teach a class on how to, you know, do a tour successfully, it's Martin Atkins.
And correct.
As you said, great guy. All right, number three is Eminem with his... he's got the mask on and the chainsaw. I loved Eminem for a couple years, about 10 years ago. Not a huge fan anymore, but this captured him at his, oh, geez, I'm scared of this man era of Eminem.
Yeah,
man.
Chainsaw on the Friday the 13th mask, I think. he was the headliner with Limp Bizkit. That was the tour.
Oh, geez.
And, yeah, that shot shows everything because he's kind of like a hillbilly. Uh-huh. So hence, I think, even without even seeing the image, I think it's where he's in overalls, but he's not wearing a shirt underneath.
Nice.
Kind of like the vibe of, yeah, you know, I'm the crazed guy. I mean, I'm the crazed uncle that, you know, people want to throw me away into jail, but yet, you know, come into my world and I'll show you what mom and dad are totally against.
Exactly.
But, you know, you'll love.
Silence of the Lambs type era for the guy. Okay, and my last one, another friend of the show, totally great guy. Has ties with Bowie as he's in the Sons of the Silent Age. Chris Conley as Bowie in his Bowie tribute group, Sons of the Silent Age. I mean, the guys look exactly alike, the same build pretty much, and gorgeous vocals. What can you say about Conley?
Another close friend. Knew him from back in the Wax Pack days with Ministry and Revolting Cock.
Nice.
A totally underrated singer-songwriter, gotta tell you. I don't know how many albums he's got out currently that's not related to, like, Sons or with industrial bands like Revolting Cox and Coxter. But the guy, again, he channels David Bowie. Sons of the Silent Age, when it first started, was a benefit at the Metro, I think, 2 or 3 years ago.
I was there, yeah.
And totally blew me away as far as his whole presentation. And a lot of thought and care went into it. Like, even though we're going to be a cover band, we're going to do it right. We're going to add as many musicians as possible to punch up the sound. And you got it right up the, without even going further, you got to give him credit for even attempting that.
Yeah.
It's nothing was really fake about it. It was a passionate plea that I love David Bowie and these songs deserve to be heard, et cetera, down to the outfit. But I think Chris, like Martin Atkins, is down to earth, totally cool, total music, totally, approachable, super friendly, but yet immensely talented. I can't say enough about Chris. And I'm just grateful to be able to do some work with him, both in the hardcore industrial scene with Coxer currently and with his side projects like Sons of the Silent Age. Can't say enough about it. I thought the show was extraordinary.
Yeah, he just released a new album this week, Decibels from Heart, it's called, and he's doing duets with a lot of different female singers on there. It's incredible. Sons of the Silent Age, when I asked him how it was, you know, you're not being a tribute act to Lou Reed, who had pretty much one image for his career. You're doing it for Bowie, who had an image every year of his career, was a complete chameleon, was always changing. I was like, how do you pick which era to go off of? And he goes, I just like the Berlin era. That was my that's when he hit the sweet spot.
Yeah, low. Man, he's really big into that. You're right. New Heroes in particular.
Sure. And you can hear that in his own music, too.
Huh. No, you're, absolutely. And he's a real huge fan of Bryan Ferry. He's a, you got to give Chris credit because he really loves sophisticated music, man. I remember when, Reckless Records, you know, he would work behind the counter, similar to Wax Trax, okay? So he's the manager at the Wax Trax, the Reckless on Broadway. And it was a day off, and the only reason why he came in was because it was a Tuesday, and Mamuna by Bryan Ferry was being released on that day. And I remember Brett, who also worked in that shop. I was right behind Chris because I was there for the same thing, to get the Bryan Ferry out. And Brett goes, hey, we're slammed. Care to come work today? And Chris goes, oh, no. Have to hear this album from top to beginning. No. This is not a to me. Cause
he's
got to
go home and listen.
Sorry, Brett, I can't come in. I got to.
That's awesome.
Totally not. Yeah, you know.
He's a fan first and foremost.
Check, you know?
Well, I think that's a perfect place to end on. Want to thank you so much for taking the time out. I learned a lot. With your permission, would it be cool to post the four pictures I talked about?
Knock yourself out. Go
awesome.
Ahead.
I know they got the watermark on there and everything, and we will give you links to the website and all that good stuff. BobbyTalaman.com, Instagram at BTalaman. Any other plugs or anything up coming up?
No, as far as shows?
Yeah.
Jeff Beck this Thursday.
Nice.
Can't wait for that. Lyle Bach doing them. Well, they're a Wax Trax band, so that's why I'm involved with that over at the Abbey Pub.
Nice.
But I'm really a huge fan of Jeff Beck. I can't wait for that on Thursday.
Yeah, that'll be pretty awesome. Just thanks for taking the time out. We will stay in touch. And, on behalf of Bobby Talaman, this is Andy signing off for the Andy Derer Show. All right, I'll chop it there, man.
This episode of the Andy Derer Show is brought to you in part by Uncle Bub's award-winning barbecue in Westmont, Illinois. Family-owned and operated since 1997, Uncle Bub's is the real deal barbecue. A family-friendly restaurant open 7 days a week. Also, it's a full-service catering company doing weddings, pig roasts, luaus, grill packages, you name it. They have a friendly, helpful staff that will make sure that your party goes off without a hitch. Call them at 630-493-9000. Visit them at 132 South Cass Avenue in Westmount, Illinois, and UncleBubs.com.
Hey man, I know you like grilling. I know you like getting those dark grill marks on your burgers, fish, chicken. And I know you don't want to just dry your meat out like you're cooking with a hairdryer. Why not get the Man Grate and click through the AndyDareShow.com's banner so we can keep the lights on here at Honeycomb Hideout Studios in gorgeous Westmont, Illinois. The Man Grate.
This episode of the Andy Derer Show is brought to you in part by Record Utopia, a music lover's dream with thousands of vinyl records, musical instruments, and sound gear. They buy, sell, and trade. Give them a call at 630-963-1957. Visit them in Westmont, Illinois at 309 West Ogden Avenue, on the web at recordutopia.com. It's always a good, relaxed atmosphere. Check them out, Record Utopia.
Be sure to follow Andy on Twitter, that's at Andy Derer, and like our show on Facebook, that's facebook.com/TheAndyDererShow. Videos at youtube.com/AndrewMartinDerer, and we're on iTunes, just search The Andy Derer Show, please leave a review. Thanks so much to our wonderful sponsors, Uncle Bub's award-winning barbecue, Record Utopia, The Man Grate, and Amazon.com. Theme song courtesy of Rich Banks Music. Thank you so much for checking out The Andy Derer Show. TheAndyDererShow.com.